Blog Talk Radio.
It's a new year. Here is a new year, and welcome to the Bedroom Show. I am your host, Nate Mass, the Guru Pilgrim. The phone number for if you want to get a call to the program here today is 319-527-6208. And press the number 1 on the keypad there. If you would like to go live, you can call that number just to listen into the show if you like. You can also listen live on freedomizerradio.com. And there is, as always, a podcast available after the show, a little bit higher quality at gurupilgrim.com. So, there is a new year in front of us here, and with it, it started differently for different people. Some people lost a loved one. Some people saw a death in their family. For some, they were devastated and demoralized, and other people found God. But this year has started, and for a lot of people, the outcome is going to be very different. There's so many different possibilities out there, and you and I each have our own path to walk and our own outcome to face. So let's see what we can do to make this year an awesome year. I want to talk today about a lot of things I want to talk about. And really, this show is a joy for me, a thrill for me to be a part of, and to kind of put together and use as an outlet to share my thoughts with the world. And so there was news that I really want to talk about that happened really late last week that I didn't get into the show last week, that really I think is important to talk about, and I wasn't super aware of it. It hadn't been talked a whole lot about in the news, but it's been referred to as if people sort of understood that this is what went on. So I want to talk about those things, as well as each week now, I think what I'm going to do for a little while is I'm going to start a series on the Democrat candidates. So I'm going to talk about each one of the candidates, because we talk about them, but do we really know anything about them? And really, probably not. Most of us would rather not have a great handle on the Democrat candidates, who they are, all of those things. So, we're going to talk about that and Andrew Yang, and we're going to go into his profile on Andrew Yang. I'll talk about why I wanted to cover him in particular to start and all of those things. Photography is a big thing in my life, and that's something I really haven't talked much about yet on the show. So, talk a little bit about photography, because this is a new year, so some people out there are using this as a chance to really do like a photography New Year's resolution of some kind, or really are interested in that. So I want to talk about that, the trends that are coming up in 2020, and so forth. We'll do a security rundown as always. There are 3 seconds to the show, so I encourage you to stick it out for 90 minutes. And I try to make it as interesting as possible. There is always a survey at gurupilgrim.com. It's like a one-question survey. It gives you the option to give feedback. So I'd encourage you to participate in the show in those ways. I want to talk about the U.S. Embassy first. The U.S. Embassy in Baghdad was attacked on December 27th. And there was an article that really, there were many articles that I looked at for this, and the one, of course, as a photographer and as a visual thinker, the one that really connected with me was one that talked about a photograph. It just had a whole bunch of really impressive photographs of the event. And I'll link that in the show notes so that you can take a look at that and just kind of see those pictures, because they're very vivid and very up close and personal. There were people on the ground when the embassy was attacked. So if you're not familiar, the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, which is in Iraq, was attacked on December 27th, 2 days after Christmas there, and it was caused by, it was a group of protesters, so to speak, and it was organized by Iran, by leadership in Iran, and the United States knew about the attack and was made aware of it before it happened. And you might remember a number of years ago when Obama was the president, we had Benghazi, and that was a big deal. And so for some people, they're trying to compare this to Benghazi. And it would seem to compare. The problem is the way that it was handled. For the media to say that this is Trump's Benghazi isn't very effective, because the way, almost is counter-effective for what they want to try to communicate. They want to try to communicate that Trump is not doing his job, and that they want to try to downplay the Benghazi attack. The problem is that Trump did respond. No one was killed in the event. There are no reports of deaths on either side. Some people were injured, but that's to be expected when you have a mob of people breaking glass and overthrowing cars and smashing windows and setting things on fire. They were able to get in past the secure zone into the embassy there. They were able to start the lobby, and they set the lobby on fire and burned down that whole room. But as I understand it, they weren't able to get any further into the embassy. There were people in the embassy. There were Americans, and Trump actually sent soldiers to the embassy before the attack arrived and reinforced them, which was the opposite of what Hillary Clinton did in that instance in her role as Secretary of State at the time. So that's a really important thing to have in context, because what happens then 6 days later is that General Qassem Soleimani, I'm not great at those languages in that part of the world. He was a general from Iran, and he was killed in an airstrike on January the 2nd. And this was something that was done in response, in a sense. Now, part of the story that goes with that to understand is that Donald Trump mentions that it is Qassem, I'm probably pronouncing all this wrong, so I do apologize. He was instrumental in organizing this Baghdad embassy attack and had plans to cause further violence and really do some damage. And so by taking him out, Trump's decision to do that was based on the fact that there were future attacks that would have happened had he not been able to take him out. So this was a person who Obama said that he had never had an opportunity to take him out, which kind of indicates that if the opportunity had arisen, it might have been an option on the table. Now, there's a little bit of flack from the media in this, and I'll talk a little bit about why. You see, I might get some of these details wrong. I think it's Afghanistan, the war of Afghanistan, I believe, or maybe the war of Iraq. Yeah, no, sorry. I believe it was the war of Iraq. Again, I don't have all of the details here. I'm just telling you the facts of the story that I think are really critical to know what's going on in the current news cycle. In Iraq, this General Qassem was fighting with the United States, and he was on, you could say, our side. But remember, we made allies with some people that we wouldn't normally make allies with, and this was a very tense war in Iraq, and not at all what we would have liked to do. We had to make some strange allies and so forth. So with all of that in consideration, this obviously was I think strategic to kill Qassem. Now, the Democrats in unison are saying that this was not a wise idea. And of course they're doing that because Trump is the one who did it. So there's a lot of back and forth there. Obviously, party lines are making that pretty set in stone. So, with that, let's talk a little bit about Andrew Yang. And I don't know if I have enough So I'm going to go ahead and talk about Andrew Yang now, because these candidates are each sort of positioning themselves and saying, look, this was wrong that Trump did anything that Trump does. This was wrong what he did, and this is why. And they all have to sort of run up themselves. Now, it's interesting because the mainstream media, who is really in favor of these Democrat candidates, if you put any one of these Democrat candidates up against Donald Trump, and they would make this person out to be a hero in comparison. However, you're pitting each of these candidates against each other, in which case the media is going to start to pick sides. And what you'll notice is that there is discrimination in the media against specific candidates. And the one that surprised me, when I did looked into this, the one that gets the least coverage was surprising me. I would have thought it would be Gabbard, Tulsi Gabbard, because that's the one that everybody says, oh, she's a Russian agent. And people in the middle are much more sympathetic, and I even think that it's easier to listen to her arguments than a lot of the Democratic candidates, because she actually can articulate things in a very clear and concise way. However, and I think a lot of conservatives would agree with that. She is a Democrat, and Andrew Yang actually surpasses her in the discrimination that he's received from the left-wing media. He has received the least amount of time in any of the debates. He has received the least coverage, the least stories, the fewest stories. Really hasn't had any exposure in comparison to the other candidates, even some candidates that really aren't even polling at all. And he's polling much better than some of the other candidates that have gotten more time than he has on these media outlets, which is just an indication that there's a bias there against him. And one of the reasons is he's an outsider. He is an entrepreneur. And that's what he's known for. But I want to talk a little bit about his profile, who he is, so that we can kind of get a better gauge on him. And I hope to do this with other candidates in the future, because I think having this will make it easier to have conversations with people. Well, so-and-so, you know, and this person and that person, being able to really say and articulate, this is who Andrew Yang is, I think it will help us. So let's do this. Born on January 13th, so this is we're coming up on his birthday, in 1975, making him 44. So he'll turn 45. Is my math right? Yes. He'll turn 45 in a week or two. Week and a half. His parents immigrated to the United States from Taiwan in the 1960s. And so he is born in the United States, but his parents are from Taiwan. So that's an important piece of history. Now, both of them, it sounds like, immigrated separately from Taiwan. His father, Kay Seung Yang, is a PhD in physics, has a PhD in physics. He worked in research labs in two big companies, IBM and General Electric, and a certified genius, I guess you could say. He has filed 69 patents in his name in his career, obviously through his work. And so that is his father. So having a father who has a PhD in physics and works in that kind of a research environment, and a mother who is really has a similar history. His mother, Nancy Yang, has her master's in statistics, was a system administrator at a local university before becoming an artist. Now, they both met, both of his parents met at the University of California, Berkeley. And so they meet at Berkeley, they get married, and there is Andrew Yang. And Andrew Yang, as a family of immigrants to the United States, with genius parents, goes into law. We think of him as an entrepreneur. And the first thing we think is, oh, he's an entrepreneur. That's what he does. He decided to be a lawyer. He had one sibling, I do believe, not a brother, I think. Could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is. He's known as an entrepreneur, but he started as a lawyer. After receiving his Juris Doctor degree from Columbia University, he worked as a corporate attorney at Davis Polk & Wardwell in New York City for 9 months. So he gets his law degree, and he goes to work, and he gets his first law job, and he only stays for 9 months. Why is that? Well, apparently, it sounds like one of his coworkers, but somebody he knew, he was familiar with, invited him to join a startup. And so 9 months after, you know, getting his first law job, he jumps into startups. And from 2000 to 2005, he sort of did startup hopping, in a sense. There were a number of businesses that he was a part of, until at a certain point he became the CEO of Manhattan Prep in 2006. Now, Manhattan Prep is a company that does like test prep software. So if you, or not software necessarily, but just test prep materials. So if you're preparing for like some big college test or something, this is a company that might make some products, and you might have even heard of them. They went gangbusters and really excelled as a company. And he went with them for another year, like 2012, he left that organization, but in 2009, that was acquired, and so he was still involved until 2012, but so then in that transition out, as he transitioned out from that company, he started Venture for America. Now, this is a really important part. I give you that because I want you to understand kind of his work experience, but then he has this Venture for America, which is a nonprofit that he starts, and this really helps us to understand where his head is at. So he starts this nonprofit in 2012 with the goal of essentially taking talent out of the big universities like California Berkeley and other well-to-do universities, and he takes that big talent. And instead of taking that talent and giving it to the big corporations, his idea is to move that across the country, sort of redistribute the talent around. Because, see, the big companies get all of the talent. Now, there's something to be said about that, I guess. Entrepreneurship is really important. I think having small business is really important. But that doesn't sound to me like somebody who wants to start small businesses. It sounds like somebody to me who wants to start startups that are super successful, that grow into massive businesses. And those are two very different things. And that's exactly what he's doing. He's taking the big talent and he's bringing them into sort of growth cities, what he considers growth cities, and says, here, you know, go here and start a startup, and hopefully you'll be huge. And that's commendable, but I think the danger is there's two dangers. There's a lack of focus on what it means to be a small business, a consistent small business. People need real services. The things that are really important are the small businesses, the day-to-day that make your food, that make your bread, the small farms, those are the people that care. And the bigger you get, the less people care. And that's just the way it is. That's a reality of life. We tend not to, when we're involved in a bigger group of people, we tend not to care as much about the outcome because we don't know my fault if something goes wrong. That's somebody else. There are other people involved. I work in an organization that was acquired by a big company. It was a 300-employee company that was acquired by a 30,000-employee company. It was a good number of years ago, so I can talk about this. And it was interesting to watch the transition and the culture that changed from one to the other. In a small business, you had this thinking that everything that I do matters. And the more effective I am, the more directly that's going to be noticed because my department's going to succeed. And my department is going to be compared to other departments more directly because we know all the departments in the organization. When you get a big corporation, what happens is all of that goes out the window. What's more important is how I get noticed for the way I can talk, not for what I get done. And language becomes more important than action. And so there's a lingo that you learn, and you learn how to talk that talk. And there's usually specific phrases that are sort of niche to the company inside of that that organization, and it gets kind of strange, frankly. And the personal responsibility really is diminished in a situation like that, because I need training on this. Okay, well, we'll give you training. So then they, you can sit down and have training. Well, okay, so now I had some training. So now I need to spend a week just getting adjusted to using this thing. Instead of just saying, well, what do I need to accomplish? Let's get it accomplished. So it changes from a goal and an accomplishment-based culture to a self-fulfillment sort of culture. So again, that was just a tangent there. But Andrew Yang, so this is his big thing recently in the past number of years. That was only up to 2017 that I saw. There could still be a thing. Pretty sure it still is a thing. It was pretty big in 2017. I think that was its peak. Maybe that's why I saw that number. But massive organization, nonprofit organization, all across the country that takes talent and tries to redistribute the talent. Does that remind you of anything else? That reminds me of a policy called redistributing the wealth. So to me, that's what I think of when I hear that. So policies. He's got a number of policies, and I want to talk about them, and I'll just highlight them here. Let's see, what are the policies that he has? The first one, the freedom dividend. This is the one that he touts all the time, which you're probably already familiar with, the $1,000 per month per citizen. So here's how it works. He decides that at a specific point in time going forward, every citizen of the United States of 18 years of age and older, regardless of their economic status, regardless of their job situation, regardless of any other factor other than they're an adult of 18 years in age or older and they are a citizen of the United States, receives $1,000 per month for a grand total of $12,000 every year. And that is direct from the government. Now, that's quite a chess game to play, because every citizen now has to pay. It's coming out of the economy. Can you say inflation? Now every individual has $1,000 more every year that they can spend. So we have instant inflation at a scale that is a little bit hard to comprehend what that would do. That's a really interesting policy. So think about that for a little bit. The one that really was interesting to me, human-centered capitalism, is what he called it. But what he really means, he says it's human-centered capitalism, and this is for the economy, right? Well, what he really means is he's going to change the way we measure the economy. So instead of looking at GDP and stock market values, we're going to ignore those numbers. And now we're going to focus on new measurements. And among these new measurements that he wants to use to determine, you know, how the country is doing and what we need to adjust, health-adjusted life expectancy is one of them. Mental health is one of them. And childhood success rates is one of them. Now, how do you measure a childhood success rate? That would be an education thing, right? How do you measure mental health? Well, how do you define a mental disorder? Each of these things, I think, and there's others that are a little more practical, measurements of health, like, median income, which, again, he's going to change by drastic inflation by this $1,000 a month per citizen dividend. So that's sort of anyway, back to the childhood success rate. Each of these things, what I think is you have the mental health, you have the health-adjusted life expectancy, and some others are going to be measures, but who measures what? How do you set the measurement? And some of them are susceptible to the government deciding what is a mental disorder. Is it a mental disorder to be conservative? I mean, that's a little extreme, right? You're not, I'm crazy, right, to think of that. But certain views like, I should have a gun. well, that could be considered a mental issue. You need to let go of that. Those kinds of things. That could be part of the thinking there. Another policy is transitioning away from fossil fuels to renewable energy, improve the way we farm and use land, and move people to higher ground, because he's really concerned about the environment. Transitioning from fossil fuel to renewable energies, we can talk forever about that. I'm sure you have your own thoughts about that one. Improve the way we farm and use land. Well, what he really means is we're going to start implementing a whole bunch of policies around farming. And we're going to make sure that farmers have a lot of policies that they have to abide by and live by. And then, of course, the funny one, move people to higher ground. That's pretty hilarious. But he means that in some sense literally and in some sense figuratively. He means to say that if we rebuild people, he really believes, are going to need to move to higher ground. But he means that also in a figurative way. There are more things that we can talk about this. It is, though, time for a break, so we're going to go ahead and move to that, and then we'll be back here in just a minute.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
Just as ungrounded signals wreak havoc on radio communications, there's growing concern that because we are not grounded, we absorb tremendous amounts of electromagnetic radiation from our modern devices. EMF stands for electromagnetic field.
We are all immersed in electromagnetic fields, from Wi-Fi, from the wiring in our homes, and it disturbs our electrical balance. We get charged. Inside of our bodies, we get electrically charged. Some people have as much as 20 volts on their bodies, and that's not good for you.
The information is provided for general informational purposes only. The contents are not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Ground Therapy Incorporated makes no representations about the efficiency, appropriateness, or suitability of any specific tests, procedures, treatments, services, opinions, healthcare providers, or other information that may be contained in or available through the information provided.
Hello everyone, I'd like to talk to you about our newest sponsor, Misty'sGardens.com. Now this is a contraption where you can grow food in your apartment, in a small patio, or if you're like me and you absolutely suck at gardening, this makes life a lot easier. It is a vertical tower garden. We can grow over 20 things at once in a small, compacted area. Good health starts with good habits, like eating wholesome foods. And with Tower Gardens, you can easily grow your own fresh, nutrient-rich food virtually anywhere year-round without soil. So, Misty'sGardens.com, have a look at it, check it out, buy it, plant, and like it. Misty'sGardens.com.
Hey everyone, come check out the Proof Negative radio show here on FreedomizerRadio.com, Monday through Thursday, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on the Pacific Coast, as we fight the New World Order and rock the health freedom world together. Please check out our sponsor, Save Around. Save Around coupon books have been with us for several years, and they help you save money when going out to eat, renting a car, buying flowers, and all kinds of other good stuff. The good thing is you can view the coupon books before you buy. Please go to our website, freedomizerradio.com, and click on the Save Around book that you'll see right next to our chat room. Like I said, you could preview it before you purchase, and hopefully you'll save yourself some money and help us as well. Please check it out.
I'd like to tell you about the open source tool that I use the most. It's not LibreOffice, and it's not some fancy IDE. It's actually Inkscape. That's right, the vector graphics editor. I use this tool for everything, from custom graphics to presentation slides. Occasionally, I'll even use it in place of publishing software. Why do I make so much use of Inkscape, you ask? Unlike some open source tools, the feature set that Inkscape touts is almost directly comparable to its expensive closed source alternatives. Like any software, it can take some getting used to, but with all the tools in easy to find places, it may be the fastest way to get started with vector graphics. Vector graphics are a kind of graphics that use points on a graph to draw lines and shapes, which makes them infinitely scalable without distortion. With a variety of grid, snapping, and alignment tools, Inkscape gives you precise control over every part of your art and opens the door to all kinds of possibilities. Install it for free. Visit Inkscape.org to learn more.
Constitutional amendment that would, quote, create a duty on the federal and state governments to be stewards for the environment. And his goal there is to really project this into the future. He wants to make it law and codified into the Constitution of the United States that we must protect our environment. What would that do? If we must, as a society, protect our environment, then the government must regulate the actions of its citizens. That's how this works. If you're going to control and protect the environment, if you're going to protect the environment, you're going to control the actions of people. Rather than trying to show people by example, rather than, I've often said, if this were real, right? If climate crisis, what's the term now? Is it climate catastrophe? Is that the term now? It's every week it's different, right? But anyway, if this is real, if we are headed for a massive disaster on the scale of larger than Chernobyl, we're talking massive apocalyptic scenario. If this were real, there are things we would see. People would be doing things a little differently. If we were really 12 years away from the end, there would be a very different reaction to this from people across the world. People would be, the very first thing that people would be doing is talking to China and India. That's what people would be doing. And if it were real, China and India would actually have a stake, have something in this, and they would be very much interested in doing things to clean it up. Anyway, passing a constitutional amendment that requires its government, the government and its the state governments as well, to do these kinds of things would be a way to prevent conservatives from repealing laws that work with the environment. This would be to make an amendment. That's what he really wants to do, and really just codify this thing. Yeah. Pulling it off would be a very, very difficult thing to do, but that's what he wants to do. He also wants to provide every American with a $100 voucher that they can use to support politicians in elections. So for every election, he wants to set aside a certain number of billions of dollars so that every American has the option to spend $100 on whichever politicians they support. And that money goes directly to the politicians. And this way, he says, we can eliminate, I mean, here's his goal, right? By doing it, then all the citizens have all the money that goes to these election, you know, the politicians that win because of the people. And it eliminates the need for other income sources like billionaires and big corporations to have as much of a say, which is an interesting thought, but and I understand that there's a problem that he's trying to solve here, but that seems like a very bizarre way to solve it. Let's just give people money. And that was his way of solving the low income problem, too. And $12,000 for people is not a whole lot of money. So it'd be kind of hard to live on that if you really were struggling. Anyway, his answer is just give everybody money. Not exactly, but that seems to be our theme for him. Another thing he wants to do is work to end the use of private prison facilities for federal inmates. He has this idea on crime that's kind of interesting. He wants to sort of, he sees this huge problem in our crime system. There he is, but you know who's solving it is Trump. Trump is already making major steps to, and has already made major steps to clean up the issues there in our prison system and in our justice system, with people and the unbalance between crimes and punishments. But it seems Andrew Yang wants to basically just do as much as he can to limit the amount of prison sentence and legal enforcement for a lot of these things. He wants to shift drug policy away from punishment and towards treatment, which essentially means he wants to stop prosecuting when there is someone using drugs illegally. Essentially what he wants to do. He wants to move people away from prosecuting for drug use. Not for drug crimes per se, but for drug use. So that'll be great. We'll have people doing drugs all over the place because of that. He wants to explore a blanket partial reduction in student loan debt. That's not unheard of for these Democrat candidates, with the potential for a sort of bailout for the people, where basically not a certain. If you've had student loan debt for a certain amount of time, then majority of it gets wiped out. Or if you've had a certain amount of student loan debt, and that gets sort of reset for you at a certain point. And I don't know why the Democrats feel that this is their big issue. I have student loan debt. But it is not my student loan debt that is hurting me. I have things that make the finances challenging, but student loan debt is not one of them. And student loan debt is one of those things that you choose. And you don't have to go to college to be successful. This is a decision that you need to make as an individual. Is college the right choice for me? And for a lot of people, the answer should be it's not. But for Democrats, the question is not, is college right for me or not? Because college is where you can really mold a person's thinking as they go. They come into college from the public school system where they've been taught that everything must be green and we need to take care of our planet. And they're going into a current system where now they get to be taught how to take that and become violent with it and how to really crush down anyone who disagrees with you by basically shouting over them. And we get to indoctrinate people in some really critical ways. So college for the leftist is of vital importance. He wants to increase funding for programs that are directed at educating the public on LGBTQ issues. He wants to work with Congress to codify Roe versus Wade into law. And the most surprising for me is that he wants to secure the southern border. And I haven't heard anybody ask him about this, but then again, I haven't really heard anybody ask him anything because nobody wants to talk to him. He wants to secure the southern border to drastically decrease the number of illegal entries into the United States. Then what he wants to do is provide a mechanism for illegals to become legal citizens and then invest in a campaign to let everybody know, let all the illegals know, that they can become citizens if they've been here for a certain period of time. And then if they refuse to be a part of that program, then he will deport them. So and there are not a lot of Democrat candidates that are saying, hey, let's deport people. And I think if Andrew really touted that as one of those big things, or even securing the border, I think he might get some flack just for thinking it, let alone for making that his big to-do. There are a lot of other things to talk about. Let's talk about cyber lifestyle. And I've been seeing some things the past week that have been really curious for me that, and just push this even further. And on this show, we talk a lot about cyber and about security and about what it takes to live in the 21st century and tracking and all of these things. There has been some stuff that's really come to my attention the past week about cameras that has really surprised me. Security cameras are becoming, they're being installed everywhere. And more and more places, you're going to see security cameras. China has something like 300,000 security cameras. I might be wrong about the number. It might be in the millions. I don't know. They have the largest. China has the largest network of security cameras in the world. And to pair that, other nations are starting to do the same thing. If you go to London, there's cameras everywhere. The United States has cameras everywhere. There's like traffic cameras and things like that. But in the United States, once you enter, a back road, or if you're walking in a mall, or if you're walking down a street, or if you're just interacting in life, you're not necessarily on camera all the time. But in some cities, you really are. And China is the worst by far. In fact, China uses facial recognition software to authenticate people to do things, like get toilet paper. You have to actually use a facial recognition to get toilet paper in a public restroom in China. That's how it works. Seoul, which is the big city in South Korea, is planning to install cameras with AI behind them to start to detect crime in Seoul, like on the streets of Seoul. And essentially, what this is going to mean is it tracks each individual on the street. So you'll have cameras everywhere in Seoul, and each individual that walks on the street is going to be tracked. And not only are they going to be tracked, but this AI is going to be analyzing their movement. It's going to be analyzing the way they move their arms, the way they follow other pedestrians, looking for signs of crime. In the way they describe it, it sounds like initially it will be harmless. Initially, it will actually be there to help prevent crime. But what you're doing by doing this is putting an immense amount of power and control in the hands of the government of Seoul. That's a pretty big deal. It's becoming more and more prevalent. And AI is shaping the way cybersecurity works. An artificial AI, if you're not familiar, I keep using this term, and I can realize some of my listeners might not be super familiar with some of these terms. AI stands for artificial intelligence. And so what this refers to is if there is the computer will analyze what's going on and try to make decisions based on it, usually tied to big data. So you have massive amounts of information, and you use that information as a way to predict things. So, for instance, you walk a street corner you walk 50 street corners every second of every day, and you see that there are 30 muggings in a year's time. And you take those 30 muggings, and you tell computers, this is what a mugging looks like, and it looks for that pattern again and again. Now, in this AI, I'm not sure how they're really getting their data from to be able to determine you missed. So this could be pretty interesting to see how it goes. We'll keep an eye on it. But in doing this, in requiring this data, one of the things that goes along with that is that companies are having to interact more and more in this space. And because when you can do things in your company better with artificial intelligence, that growth is very real. And for a lot of companies, even more and more small companies, are getting into cloud and into big data in ways that they never had before. There's a few different blog posts that I want to highlight that is that IoT company Wise exposes the data of 2.4 million of its users. And this is an IoT company. So the vendor is one that makes like cameras and things like that, but attached to things like Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant. And it makes these small, these home cameras and other connected devices like light bulbs and things like that. And the thing is, in your home, you have cameras and you have microphones and you have lights and these different things. If you start to put those IoT devices in, each device that you add adds a larger footprint to your security risk for your home. And this happens with companies, but in a company, they have to do certain things. They have to have different platforms to do different things. Each platform that you have adds security vulnerabilities to your organization. And that's something to take into mind. But it happens in the home, too. The more things we add to our home, the more danger there is in each of those things being hacked. The Alexa has a vulnerability right now on it that you could compromise it and listen in to a house somewhere. You could look that up. I'm pretty sure there's these resources out there for that. So this is the challenge, right? This is where we're going to be going in 2020. And the way we're trying to in 2020 and in future episodes as we get through this. And this is episode number 5, and so there's a whole year ahead of me, and I hope to try to start to put some of these thoughts together in a way that's concise and clear that helps you to understand how to really secure your own lifestyle. And to know when I'm going and doing something, who knows about it, and how much do they know about me, so that you can just kind of live a more secure lifestyle and just a happy lifestyle. Just being aware of things, I think, is an important thing. I'm going to throw a few security things just to mention them. There is a restaurant chain which disclosed the name is Landry's, which I might have heard of, but I've definitely never been to one. They disclosed a malware incident where their point-of-sale systems had malware. Going to a restaurant is always dangerous. Can you hand in your card to somebody? And then work away with it. So the best thing you can do definitely is get like a prepaid card or a reloadable prepaid card that's not attached to your bank account, just a separate card. And, you know, load it up a certain amount of cash and it can't go over, but you don't have any worry about it then. But definitely that's something to do. There's action involved in doing that. And there's hassle involved in doing that. But with security, this is how it works. There's always a trade-off. Do I want to be secure about the way I do things or not? Or do I want to have the convenience? Convenience or security, you get one or the other, basically, in most of these decisions. And a story that has been picked up by a number of the sources that I follow is that there was a camera maker that was by the name of Xiaomi, X-I-A-O-M-I. I'm not really sure how to pronounce that. They're from China. And they make smart cameras and so forth. Similar to that story, but they, Google has basically shut down their cameras. And just, it was pretty bad. So being able to see into your hair, that's kind of not a good thing. So anyway, they were shut down their access for now, but it wasn't Google's fault. But it was a fault in the camera, and Google has reached out to them, and they haven't responded yet to Google. So that's something that happened. Cyber criminals are filling up on gas pump transaction scams ahead of an October change in legislation. Starting in October, gas stations are going to be more liable for fraud from credit cards. So they're going to have to protect their payment gateways more severely. So, it sounds like currently it's possible to take a stolen car and buy gas and then disappear, and the gas station is not liable for that. Now, making them liable means that they have to make sure that you're not stealing cars. Well, you know, it's not that. It's the other way around. It's when you you scan your card. If your card gets stolen, then they would be liable for that going forward. So that's going to start in October here of 2020. So the challenge, though, is that criminals now are supposedly gearing up and stealing more data and trying to steal more credit cards. So that is what it is. I'm not sure how interested you are in theology. The Methodist Church is going to split. That is something that we kind of knew was going to happen for a while. And the Methodist Church is definitely going to split now. Essentially, the way it sounds is the group, if you remember the vote, and the ones who said that basically the biblical definition of qualifications for clergy must stand, and that when it says husband of one wife, that applies to clergy, and that you can't become a clergy unless you meet these qualifications. Those are the ones that ran up there, not because of the American Methodist Church, but because of the African Methodist Church. And so they are, but there was still a problem that it sort of needed to split, because you couldn't have these two views becoming more and more divided, and you couldn't continue to have the same church with these two greatly different views. So finally, it sounds like they've agreed to do the ones who were, I guess you could say, more conservative. They are in control now, and they are basically going to form a new, they're going to basically, I guess you could say, use the word secede, right? They're going to allow the Methodist churches that have the convictions of the votes that won to leave the Methodist Church and form a new denomination. And the new denomination is going to have these more conservative views and not allow paid clergy. The remaining church is then going to be allowed to form its own, like reform its own denomination or whatever. So it's almost like a way of dissolving the Methodist Church, in the sense that so I have no idea what it's going to be called in the future and what that's going to look like, but definitely that's happening. So there's that. Private doomsday preppers. This was kind of interesting to me. So remember years ago there were doomsday preppers, and they were all the conservatives, and everybody made fun of them because they were like, oh, we're not going to have a doomsday. Our nation isn't going to be attacked. And, we're not fine. So you're crazy. And in fact, if you were a doomsday some people thought you were a threat, you know, because you had guns. So that was the thinking then. But now it's sort of turning around, and there are people who are climate doomsday preppers who are preparing for a climate doomsday. And it's funny, the things that they want to put together are similar. The things that they want to accumulate, food, first aid kits, batteries, flashlights, these kinds of things. I thought that was kind of funny, so I thought I would mention it. There was a Texas church shooting, and this one maybe I should get into in the next segment. We're also going to talk about photography and the trends that are coming up. And so all of that is coming up on the Pilgrim Show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Do you need an image editor that is capable of advanced manipulation with layers and masks, but can't afford a CS subscription? You should check out GIMP, the GNU Image Manipulation Program. GIMP is an open-source image editor with loads of powerful features. It is available for Linux, macOS, Windows, and other operating systems. I certainly use it. I probably find myself opening GIMP on average about once a day. I find that for most of the day-to-day tasks that I do on images, whether that be photo retouching or graphic creation, GIMP is more than capable of getting the job done. Although the workflow is a bit more destructive than Photoshop, the way it handles layers and masks is super easy and intuitive. It also has powerful tools for controlling selection, including path tools and smart selection tools. At the cost of free, why not give it a try? Visit www.gimp.org today.
I've heard stories from teachers in classes where their students are grounded that they have half the level of referrals for discipline. Some students who were in tears because they were experiencing success when before they were experiencing failure with their behavior and discipline. I've heard stories from teachers with autistic children who have been grounded where they have less of what they call the meltdowns. And the meltdowns are less frequent and shorter, and they come back into the classroom and they're learning more than they had learned prior to the grounding. It's amazing what happens, not just with the teacher at the front of the class, but what can happen with the student sitting in the class. And just think, if every single student and every single teacher and every single classroom and every single school across this whole world was grounded.
The information is provided for general informational purposes only. The contents are not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Ground Therapy Incorporated makes no representations about the efficiency, appropriateness, or suitability of any specific tests, procedures, treatments, services, opinions, healthcare providers, or other information that may be contained in or available through the...
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org. Hey everyone, come check out the Proof Negative radio show here on freedomizerradio.com, Monday through Thursday, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on the Pacific Coast, as we fight the New World Order and rock the health freedom world together.
Any details yet, but we will have some more information in the coming week or so. We are going to be putting in, we're working on a chat platform. We're going to do some testing, and we're going to be trying out some chat. And we took the chat offline. We just had some issues with it. We wanted to change the way that we do that. And more changes to the website are coming, as always. Just little by little, we're making some progress here. If you would like to be a part of Freedomizer Radio, there are openings for co-hosts. There are openings for hosts. If you want to be involved in any way, reach out to us on the website there at freedomizerradio.com. The Texas church shooting that I'm referring to here was, I believe, in the week of Christmas, right after Christmas, I believe, or Christmas Eve service, maybe, right around Christmas. And pretty horrific event. If I remember correctly, and I'm doing too much of this from memory, I really should have written these details down. There were like two people killed, and the gunman was shot down by one of the security personnel in the church. What a lot of churches are doing now because of these church shootings is designating specific individuals who the elder board is aware of what they carry. And they come into church and they carry, and they look just like everybody else in there, and they are just like everybody, just sort of random people in the pew, and you don't know who they're going to be, are armed. And so this actually has some people terrified, and USA Today is one that says that this was a terrifying thing. I have an article from the Daily Wire here that I'll share in the show notes, both at freedomizer.com and freedomizerradio.com and weirdhilton.com. I keep saying freedomizer.com. I should really make sure that I know what's on that site so that I can not direct you to it. Anyway, the USA Today article says that it was terrifying that Texas churchgoers were armed when they were attacked. That's scary, scary stuff. I mean, imagine if one of those guns had, if they hadn't been there, you know, if those armed men hadn't been there, then at least, you know, the shooter would have. What is the thinking behind that? Why is it terrifying? What is so terrifying about protecting yourself? Isn't it terrifying that there was someone who came into a church and pulled out a gun and started shooting a shotgun, and at close range killed two people? Isn't that terrifying? Isn't it terrifying that if there hadn't been anybody there to take him out, that he could have killed 40 plus people in one incident? So let's not worry about those, you know, 38 lives that were saved in that Texas shooting. Let's be terrified by the fact that there are guns in this country, in a country where we have a constitutional right to carry arms and to bear arms. And the reason is not just to go hunting. We have the constitutional right to bear arms against tyranny and for self-defense. You can't bear arms against tyranny without assault weapons. I'm sorry. It's not possible. Because tyranny, you say, oh, well, that's an issue of the past. That's still the Constitution. That is what the Constitution is there for. We can have tanks if we want. We can have cannons. We can have big, big weapons. And we should. The citizens should be the ones to have those kinds of weapons. Let's talk about photography. That's a little bit lighter topic. And, you know, probably not going to have a whole lot of photography listeners to the show, because here's what happens to me, and this is a personal problem. I'll talk a little bit about this. Could be a window into myself. I have this challenge where I have all these interests, right? And photography is one of them. I'm a creative. I'm a thinker. And the problem is a lot of creators and a lot of thinkers tend to be liberal, and I'm conservative. So I alienate everybody. So part of my fear in putting a show together was that, you know, if I'm really going to be myself, I'm going to alienate every single one of my listeners at some point in my show. So maybe I should start doing that. Maybe I should just start my show off by saying, hey, welcome to the show. I'm going to offend you at some point in the show. So I do apologize. But in light of the fact that I really like to share my thoughts, I'm going to share all my thoughts. And you can dislike them, but don't take them personally. And not contacting you any way, shape, or form. I really do love everybody and care about everybody, and I just love to share my thoughts and would love to hear your thoughts. Phone number 5, 319-527-6008 if you have some thoughts you would like to share with me. Photography trends in 2020. Well, photography, I was just at a photography event, and boy, I could talk about that too. I helped to critique some photographs and so forth. And there's a digital trends article about the 2020 trends that they expect to see. So I wanted to comment on them a little bit because some of them are really relevant to the photography world and might be worth exploring or talking about or seeing. The first one that they think is going to be they say images are honest, images that are honest. That is, instead of worrying about the authenticity instead of worrying about competition or, oh my goodness, I'm starting to not use words anymore. Instead of worrying about the composition or the right exposure or, you know, all the technical aspects of a photograph and what makes a photograph great, people are now worried about being real and just communicating an idea. And that's cool. I think that's important. I needed to do that a little bit myself. I was in this rut where I just wasn't making any progress. I'm starting to feel the urge to maybe go shoot again. But I haven't been shooting recently because, you know, I've been shooting, I had some really good stuff, and then I went out and I shot, and I got some really bad stuff. And I was like, man, am I just losing my touch? Is there, you know, have I plateaued? What do I do with it? You know, I'm afraid to shoot anything because I know I critique photos and I think about photos so much that I'm thinking, you know, if I take this photograph, I'm going to see all the things that are wrong with it. And I can't find something that I really enjoy shooting. But this is part of making good photography, is really trying to tell a story. And if you get stuck, I think the first thing to do is just throw everything out. Don't think about it. It's going to come. Composite, you're not going to make something that looks stupid ugly. If you've been in photography for a while, you're going to know the composition. You're going to know your tools. You're going to know all of those things. It's going to come naturally. And you're going to be able to just go out and shoot. So don't worry about that, all of that specific technical mumbo jumbo, but just get in and shoot something honest. That's a pretty good idea. With that, they sort of expand in this article and they say images that end stigma. And the idea is stigma is attached to photography very much so, and a photograph sort of reinforces your stigmas and your stereotypes of people. And so there's a trend to try to shoot photography, and I've seen it even in my local community, where we have people that are shooting things specifically to communicate against the stigma, to end discrimination and so forth. That's a really cool way to use photography. Anytime that you're taking an idea and you're instead of using words to communicate the idea, you're using photographs, I think it's a really powerful thing to do. And it has changed the world. It has influenced the world. Photographs have really done things that have really impacted the way that people behave. Images with a purpose is the next one that they talk about, which is really, again, it's like, it's the same point. I don't even know why I'm in there. And then expressive images with bold colors. So the idea here is like going outside the box. And actually doing like overlays and mixed media, and really that's what it is, mixed media. I have not really done any mixed media myself, and that would be like you take a photograph and you put an overlay of some kind on it, or you do an illustration and you match that in with a photograph in some way, and you sort of mix different types of media. Some people have done a combination of print and digital, So they'll do like a set of print images, and then they'll take a picture of them, and then that'll be their final work. Or the opposite. They'll take pictures and they'll put them onto a canvas or something like that. That's what we call mixed media. So apparently they think that we're going to see more of that, specifically in the realm of including more digital and more illustration. That could be cool. The biggest thing with photography for me is you really have to have an idea. And one of the photographers I respect the most is in the community here. He's a real expert. And his big point, anytime you'll see a photograph, his first question, his first thing he says, why did you take this photograph? What was your purpose? And having a reason for taking photographs and really trying to communicate, using it as a communication tool is really the key to making good photographs. So if you're into that stuff, that's that. There were a couple other things to talk about. Joe Biden revives the Charlottesville Very Fine People hoax. In his ad, and that keeps coming back. It really goes to show over and again how people on the left are taking anything that Trump says and trying to make a villain out of him for it. And Charlottesville has been disproven in 15 different ways, but by 30 different people. And it still keeps coming back, and they keep telling. It's sort of like the children in cages hoax, too. They keep saying, oh, there were children in cages. And that's like his greatest defense. When, first of all, those cages were put in place under the Obama administration, which has been reported on in a lot of places. And Trump put an end to it. Trump actually responded and put an end to it. And he said, no, you know what? Fine. If we're going to play this game, I'm going to do something that I don't have the power to do, and I'm going to tell them that they have to not separate children at the border from their parents. And that was then, that was challenged, I believe. I don't know. That was a long time ago. But anyway, each of these things, the Charlottesville thing, here's the thing with Charlottesville. Charlottesville was an orchestrated attack. There were people behind that. They wanted to create chaos and do all of this, and these two different groups ended up clashing. I think it was Black Lives Matter came into these, you know, white supremacist group, supposedly. But the white supremacists are not the Trump base. They're like 8 white supremacists in the United States. And the rest of it is just hype to try to make it look like there are, you know, millions of these people. I exaggerate a little bit, but they really are not. These people are not really. And if you look at the policies that Trump has been putting in place, the people that he's selecting, the way he interacts with different communities, this is not. Just look at the Brexit movement. If Trump were really this horrendous white supremacist, where would the Brexit movement be coming from? And that's not just one person. There are probably hundreds of thousands of people in that movement. And I think the same thing is starting to happen in the Jewish community as well. So it's really, when Trump said draining the swamp, when Trump got up there, he said, you know, here's my big campaign. I'm going to drain the swamp. It really only clicked with me what that meant in the at the point just in the past few months when we've come all this way and we have these election hearings. See, I'm losing my ability to use words. Not election, impeachment hearings. We have these impeachment hearings, and people from the swamp came out in public and talked and told their stories and had this air about them of supremacy, that they were more important than the elected officials that came and went, and that they were the ones who made policy. And seeing that, and seeing this massive bureaucracy fall into chaos, is what it means to drain the swamp. And so that is happening more and more. And this is cool. This is fun to watch. In 2020, this election year is going to be so interesting. We have all the Democrat candidates, which are going to just really hit each other hard. And no one's really going to come out strong on top. They don't have anybody strong to run. It's going to be somebody that we look at and go, really, that's your candidate? That's who you're going to put up there? And they're going to run. It's probably going to be, who knows, it could be Biden, could be the nominee at this point, which would be really surprising to me. I never thought he stood a chance. But, you know, I'm not a leftist, so I don't know how they think, really. We'll see. This could be fun. There is a cool story about a spacecraft that is the first of its kind. A spacecraft that's designed to go out into space and collect garbage. And this is something we need. Let me tell you, this is something we need. Regardless of its success, I think this is the right direction to go. And this is a Daily Beast article. And so they're kind of touting this as it could be just as dangerous to go out there with this kind of a spacecraft and try to collect garbage. And I don't understand why they would say that. Let's take a closer look at this article. It says there's a lot of junk in space, tens of thousands of pieces of it circling the Earth. And this is true. The European Space Agency is about to pull one of its biggest hunks of garbage from orbit, but there's a problem. The same tech that could help make space cleaner might, in the long run, make it more dangerous. That's because, they say, the ESA's ClearSpace 1 orbital garbage truck, as well as other spacecraft like it, could double as a weapon. Swiss startup ClearSpace designed the ClearSpace 1 vehicle to intercept a chunk of debris, latch onto it, and drag it back to Earth's atmosphere, where it can safely burn up. The ESA has scheduled the cleanup mission for the 2025 and has even identified its target, a 265-pound piece of an old rocket orbiting at 310 miles above the Earth's surface. This is needed because we really have to do this, and I don't know what the danger would be. Okay, so you could double it as a weapon. We need to go get this debris. There is way too much of it, and it's becoming more and more of a problem for a host of reasons. And, you know, when you have large pieces of debris, you have to navigate around them. When you have small pieces of debris, they become extremely dangerous. You put a satellite up into space, and your chances of colliding now are getting larger, and it's just a real problem. So anyway, I'll link to this article. If you're interested, you can take a look. Christianity Today, I had talked about the article that we had from Christianity Today about how Trump needs to be removed. Well, it turns out the editor who wrote that article is resigning. So he says, well, my retirement is a couple of days away. I'll be posting here more often now. So he's going to continue to like post things sort of in an affiliate way, but he is no longer employed at Christianity Today. And I say that's probably the right move. Because essentially, if you're unfamiliar, he wrote an article posted on Christianity Today that got a lot of flack. And basically it was, we at Christianity Today have not said anything about Trump yet, but now with these impeachment hearings, now that he's been impeached, we really think he should be removed from office. And there was no context provided. Basically, they seemed to think that the two things on the table now, which are neither of them are crimes, are definitely impeachable, and then he needs to go for them. You can't go to a lawyer when Congress wants you to talk to them. That's against the rules. Oh, and if you have power as the president of the United States, that's a bad thing too. We can't let you have power and use it. That would not be good. So anyway, that's the take there. So I think that's interesting. We had talked about TikTok, and there were three more stories about TikTok. In each individual stories, different stories, and that's a little concerning to me. I think TikTok might be in trouble. This would not be the time to invest in TikTok stock. It's a China-based company, and obviously the U.S. Army is not allowed to use it now. They have their transparency report that they released, and in it, the Chinese government, them being a Chinese company, is not listed on their transparency report forever, like at all. It's not even on there. So that was kind of strange. And the other countries that are listed, like they have like the number of times that TikTok has been contacted for takedown requests, and China, the Chinese government has never, it wasn't on there, so we don't know. We have no record of that, but yes, we have no idea. So TikTok is kind of on its way out there too, I think. I've been learning language. I've been doing that a little bit. Still kind of trending away. I think tomorrow's going to be Hebrew, so that'll be fun. And my next step then is going to be on the numbers. So I'm finishing up greetings here tomorrow with Hebrew, and I'll be doing numbers. So learning language, and that's a fun thing. I would love to hear what your thoughts are of the show, what I could do better. I am always looking to improve. So each week what I'm doing is I'm kind of looking back on myself and saying, what did I do and what I could have done better? And I'm sure there are always going to be things. And definitely making the show better is what I really want to do. And part of that is going to be sound bites, having better audio intros and transitions and those kinds of things. So look forward to that in future episodes. This is episode number 5, and they say episode number 7 is the key. If you can get past number 7, you're golden. I had a show before that made it about 7 episodes. On the Book of Proverbs. That was a lot of fun. But, that is where I'm at with that. I don't have a whole lot of thoughts left that I haven't talked about that I would really care to talk about. So all I can do is say I encourage you to listen to future episodes. There's a lot more to come, and I look forward to it. And check me out at GuruPilgrim.com, and thanks for listening.
Special thanks to Freedomizer Radio for hosting this show live at freedomizerradio.com. Background music by SAVFK, available at soundcloud.com/SAVFK. Up next on Freedomizer Radio, Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.